For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Evening, everyone. For you and people, I'm Tiger Knight, and the teacher of Ancient Dragons and Gate. And I'm very happy to have giving a talk this evening. Matt Vogel, who's our head Doan, and thank you, Matt, for giving a talk to me.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate the chance to be able to do it. And thank you all for being here tonight. I don't think I know all of you, actually, so welcome. As Taigen said, I'm Matt Vogel, and I'm the head Doan here, which means I take, one of the things I do is help take care of the altar and ring the bells and fill the positions and things along with Laurel. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And yeah, it was just at Green Gulch, which was, and Hakusho, for all of you who know Hakusho, says hello to everyone, so he wanted to send the greetings to you guys. So I was away and I didn't have any cell phone reception or Wi-Fi, so I missed the week of nuclear annihilation and then also the Charlottesville thing. So I heard about it at the last Dharma talk, so it was sort of like, whoa, you know. And just what the speaker Jiryu talked about on Sunday, he was also not ready for that as well. He said, though, you know, greed, hate, and delusion, we have to take care of it and tend to it, because we can see what happens when we don't. It gets out of control. And he said, you know, it's really easy to denounce people with, you know, white hoods and baseball bats doing that kind of thing, but it's a little bit harder to look at it more closely and see that, you know, this white supremacy really goes through our whole culture, and it's part of the fabric of who we are. So I hope at the end of the talk maybe to bring it back to that, but I wasn't really prepared to talk about this event, so maybe we can add it into the discussion later. So what I did want to talk about, though, was during the practice period, we in the spring, we talked about this book, Cultivating the Empty Field, Hongzhe, who is one of our ancestors in this practice. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about Hongzhe, except that was the chant we read today was one of his works, which I really love and enjoy. But one thing that really struck me and has really sort of been, I guess, bothering me a little bit about one of the texts is he, in two different places, I'll read one of them to you, he talks about roaming and playing in samadhi, or roaming and playing in zazen, or roaming and playing in meditation. He says it in one of them here, and he also talks about, in another part, I'll read a little section of that, overcoming every obstruction, it shines through every empty dharma. He's talking about silent illumination. Leaving discriminating conditioning, enter clean, clear wisdom, and romp and play in samadhi. So for me, reading this, I've never really thought of zazen, or I'm also going to talk a little bit about some of the forms that we have here, as playing. I've never thought of it as romping and roaming and playing, because it doesn't really seem like play to me. It seems a little, I mean, a lot of times for me, I have some pain in my hips, you know, or in my knee. It can be uncomfortable at times to sit. Maybe even worse than feeling discomfort is boredom. You know, it's like, if it's boring, it's like, that might be worse. I wish I had some pain to, like, pay attention to, you know? And sometimes when people, when I've read books and when they talk about meditation, and I think this is actually really helpful, but sometimes they make it seem like another task. Like, it should be like you brush your teeth in the morning, you know? And that doesn't seem like playing. It seems like something you do to take care of yourself, of course, but it doesn't seem like playing. So this whole idea of romping and roaming and playing in zazen was really like, what is he talking about? So I decided to, like, explore that a little bit. and also exploring it in Zazen and also in the forms and rituals we do too. Because I think actually the ritual part of it is very closely tied to Zazen anyway in Zen. So as you, some of you know, I'm also a teacher, and so I teach younger children, and they play a lot. And so I started to try to think about, well, how do kids play, and how could that be similar? How could I maybe relate that to what we do here in Zazen or what we do here with the rituals? So I'm going to ask you to do something, because I am a teacher, and I don't, I'm not going to ask you to play or anything, but I am going to ask you, well, maybe we can, no. I am going to ask you to talk to someone else. I know it might be scary. So it could be like a group of three or a group of, to just find someone sitting next to you, basically, that you can just like, you're going to only have to talk to them for about 1 minute, okay? So that's how I talk to my kids. I don't know. That's how. So first of all, before you talk with them, think about a time when you were a kid, when you were probably below 10, I'm guessing, but a time that you remember where you were playing and you just really were playing. You really enjoyed it. So just take a second to think about that. It could be when you were really, really young, or maybe in second grade, or I don't know. Just think about it for a second. All right, so find that person and just really quickly for 1 minute or so, just share like what kind of play did you do? Go ahead.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'll tell you mine. I had a chance to think about it.
Yeah.
I remember playing Star Wars with my brother, like sometimes with the little guys. Yeah. So I'm that age, you know, like the guys, or just like playing, like we play in the backyard, just like, you know, Han Solo, Chewbacca fighting this, or maybe we were the stormtroopers, so just like playing like that. So
I do martial arts. I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And sometimes it's really playful.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like creative and you're responding to what somebody else is doing, but you're also kind of like free within the boundaries of what you're doing.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So
that's not when you're a kid, though. That wasn't an instruction. No, I'm just kidding.
No, like I'm just kidding. But
no, I'm going to ask people that later, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you play soccer or like sports or anything? Or?
Yeah, for sure. I played sports. I'm just thinking of that like free play kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was all kind of like sports for me.
Okay. That's fine, though, too. Yeah.
Maybe because I was kind of a brainy kid and I had two sisters. So my sisters were doing like their things.
Yeah.
And I was either doing sports or...
Yeah.
I guess I'd probably play in the backyard.
Yeah, right.
Around.
Exactly.
I'd love to climb trees.
Yeah, exactly. Like stuff like that. Yeah. That's playing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Climbing trees was always...
I had a tree fort that I climbed in. Yeah.
I had friends, we made tree forts all the time, which was fun too.
Yeah.
And then played all kinds of like crazy
like
runaway
war tag, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. All right, so thank you for that was great. Thank you for does anyone want to share what they talked about or what they remember playing as a kid? I mean, I have a couple, but I thought it might be more interesting to hear from you guys, so. Yes, yeah.
I grew up around a lot of cousins, and we were, I guess I've always been into strange things. We used to have seances. And, one time, we were in this room, and we conjured the spirit of Abraham Lincoln. And we all swore that we saw this head here in a blow and turned. And we ran screaming out of this room. We still have that same house. And we to this day, we call it the Lincoln Room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah.
This is not about me, but I was with my nieces and nephews one day, and... they all got kids. And the older cousins were running around saying, oh, come out in the yard right now. The kids are going to play duck, duck, goose. And I thought, this is a good event here. We're going to go out and watch the kids play duck, duck, goose. And it was really, really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Michael, come on. What did you point on here? Come on. I want to hear this.
I didn't really think about anything specific. I immediately started thinking about the woods and the creeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Where I grew up, that's what we always did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we build
forts
or
pretend
to play war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, go on.
So I think of the one I talked about. A lot of them I said as young kids, you should be around, surrounding the idea of running away.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I would put together a knapsack and I would go and I would camp out in neighbors' yards and
yeah. How long did you, what was the longest, do you think?
I mean, my mom sometimes would let me stay overnight as long as she knew.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone else?
I'll share it.
Yeah.
With you in mind, and I'm having more and more memories come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What first came to mind when you asked the question was just a memory of putting some of the other boys on my street when I was young. And it was some combination of tag and mm-hmm. whatever kind of games our imagination led us to. And I just remember my mom coming and asking, don't you want to come in? I'm tired. And it's just this feeling of sort of just bliss and just pure joy. And I couldn't mm-hmm. imagine being tired. And I just thought I had endless energy. And mm-hmm. there was nothing more I wanted to do than just keep running around and playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I had my cue to go in was when it got dark, you know, and then I had to go in, and still I stretched it, right? It's like still, yeah, right, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when I was thinking about similar kind of things, like I used to play Star Wars with my brother, because that was when that was big, you know, and we used to play with the figurines and play World War II in the neighborhood. I don't know, it was like just, but it was like all, so what I remembered about when I was thinking about this and also watching kids that I teach, it's like when kids are playing, it's almost they're creating this kind of bigger container, a different world. It's like there's sort of like there's a, for kids, and I think you guys are remembering this, there's not a real distinction between what's real and what's imaginary, because it's sort of blurred there. And it's almost like you get to try on different selves. Like, I used to love to play Greek myths, so I got to be Perseus sometimes, you know? And I was really Perseus. I mean, I wasn't, but I was, you know? And it's this kind of interesting place, play, where you can try on being a hero. You can try on being the villain. You can try on being a school teacher. Like, my sister used to play school all the time, which always struck me as weird, but but now, yeah, I guess now I do it all the time. But and there's also, like, I think you were saying, there's like this energy and this kind of joy when you're doing it. It's like a different mindset or an attitude. And for some people, like the same thing when they were kids could have been a chore. Like I loved playing baseball until I played on a team, and then it was a chore. So it's like almost like it depends on, you know, it could just different contexts can be different. It's like about an attitude, a mindset that you might have. And I think a lot of it, not always, but a lot of it is like this really active expression with our bodies when we're kids too. Like, we're not thinking about it, but he was talking about climbing trees. I was like, oh yeah, I used to climb trees all the time, you know, and just like running and chasing and all that. So it's really a way that we express ourselves with our bodies as well. I also want to say, though, I don't think play is always fun either. I think there can be times when play, like when we're trying on some of these different ways of reacting and responding, it can also be, and I see it, I think I don't remember that as much, but I see it in kids. Like, they can really be serious about an argument they're having with someone else, and there's rage there, you know, but then it goes away, you know. But that's okay too, because I think that's a way of trying on these feelings and playing with them a little bit in a safe space of play. In school too, like some of the things I do as a teacher is we actually have kids play board games, and the intention is to help them out with social situations, because kind of the way you play games is kind of the can be kind of the way you interact with other people sometimes. So play can also be a way of place where you can make mistakes, especially like in a school setting. So you can make a mistake in this small group while you're playing this board game, and it's not such a big deal, but you can learn from that then. This is what I've been thinking about with play in kids, and I know there's like libraries full of information or things about the psychology of play and all that, and I'm not going to go into that. I don't have that sort of background. But I think, the other thing I wanted to mention too, I think what a lot of us talked about is play was this communal thing where, not always, I mean, I remember playing on my own for long periods of time, but play is also a communal thing where you're interacting and responding with other people, and I think that's a really important part of play. Where, again, you can try out different ways of responding to people. You can try out different ways of being with other people. I was also thinking about what are some of the kinds of play, then, do we do as adults? And you're sharing. Can you share what you said with
jiu-jitsu? Sure. So I do martial art. I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And often when you're sparring with your opponent in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, sometimes it's pretty close to a fight, but sometimes it can be very playful too, where you're kind of creatively responding to what your partner is doing, and you're trying out new positions and new moves, and it can be one of those experiences where you're aware of what you're doing, but in not in a deliberate way, where it sort of flows, and sort of like something happens and you respond without that sort of premeditated, heated X, I'm going to do Y. That like creative flow, improvisation part is really fun.
Yeah. Does anyone else have something they consider play that they do? For example, I'll give you my wife is a knitter. That's her one way to play. For me, that would be the worst chore in the world. For me, like, I like would mess it up. But like for her, like to sit down and that's just like, you know, she can. That's her form of play. Anyone else? Yeah, Laura. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very joyful and fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Improvisational music.
Oh yeah, that's yeah play. Yeah, for sure. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, music, it seems like as adults, a lot of people play, one form of their play is instruments. I've thought about that, yeah. I learned how to play a little bit of guitar, and that was like, it was interesting because it was serious, but it was also play, you know. I was like really trying to get it right, but it was also like this, again, this space where I was like trying it out, just trying it out. Some of the things that I thought of a lot of adults play sports, painting, writing. Some people, I think, like to do research. That's their form of play. I know one person who likes to balance their checkbook. Sounds, again, strange, but I think there's like a sense of like, I got it down to, you know, like. So Thich Nhat Hanh, part of his monk's training for his monastic order is one of the components is called play. So like they have sutra study, they have meditation, they have play. And in this temple, one of the realms of priesthood is creative expression. So I think even though we don't think about it as being an important part of our lives, I think that we still play a lot. Did anyone think that Zazen was a form of their play? Maybe Taigen, I don't know. Yeah, probably. So again, I didn't think about that at first, but how can we think about Zazen and these forms that we do here, the rituals that we do here as play? How does it connect with that? Because I'll start with the forms and the rituals that we do. We just did a service, where there's lots of bowing, and you know, we also did a ritual bowing to our cushions when we came in. So my first impressions when I started this practice that all that was a little bit weird, you know, it's a little strange. Also kind of restrictive, you know, like, oh geez, do I really have to bow every single time I sit on this thing, you know? And what's with all this ritual and stuff? Because ritual seems to me, the word ritual, previously, up until maybe even recently, seemed like maybe a synonym for stuffy. You know, it's kind of restricted, right? So being head doan has really sort of opened up my eyes, because I'm in charge of, like, you know, teaching people how to ring the bells or, you know, bow to their cushions and things like that. And so what I found is, like, for example, bowing to, it's, again, it can be about the mindset that you bring to it, or I'm trying to find the right word, or the attitude you bring to the forms. So bowing to the cushion could be like, oh, this is stupid, I don't like this, or this is really restrictive, or why are we doing this, or nothing, like, okay, just doing it. Or I started to think, well, what if I brought a mindset of, like, what happens when I bow to a cushion? And I just realized, like, oh, this cushion is literally supporting me in my practice. It's supporting me, you know, like, if I didn't have this cushion, you know, my hips would probably hurt a lot more, and it's supporting me. And then turning around to bow to the Zendo, this place is a wonderful place that supports all of us here. It's a place that people come to for refuge. It's a people place. And so just that little sort of, like, turn of attitude, of mindset, of, like, I'm going to play with this a little bit, helped me see, like, oh, this is, you know, bowing, this can be a really important thing. And it's just bowing, but it's also, you know, very lively, very, very something that now gives me a lot of pleasure when I do. I really enjoy it now. And I think, like, just bowing wholeheartedly, I think that's another thing that kids do when they play. Just, like, just wholeheartedly bow, and it doesn't have to mean, like, yes, or anything like that, but just bowing is really, I don't know, it's really energetic, I think, really enlivening to me. Another thing, too, that I learned as I learned these positions is one of the things I have to do, we have to do, as Michael is doing, he did a really good job, by the way, is watching and ringing the bell at the right time. And when I was first doing this, I wasn't doing it at the right time at all. it was like, so sometimes the taikan would have to go like this to let me know when to ring the bell at the right time. I don't know if you remember that or not, but it was really helpful. But at the time, though, and another time, so before we do an all-day sitting, one of the jobs of the doan is to light a little piece of charcoal and put it in the incense burner so that when it starts, it's ready to go and everything. And I forgot to do that. And what I felt at the time was I saw Taigen lighting it, and I was like, oh, my God, he must think I'm a total idiot. He's probably really mad at me. He'll never let me do this job again, and maybe I should just, like, stop right now. And, like, all this, like... And what was really interesting about that, though, is because it was in this sort of form, in this ritual context, I was able to, like, really just watch that come and then actually just watch it go. And when I talked to Taigen later, he was like, oh, just light it next time. I was like, oh, yeah. Like, and so that helped me think, like, how do I relate to other times when I think I'm done something wrong or, you know. But even just in that moment, it was just really interesting to just watch all of that stuff come up. And I think one thing that these rituals can give us is that sort of bigger container to watch these things, to watch us just experience the maybe shame, I guess, I felt, or embarrassment. So I think these forms can be, again, really a lively way to practice if you have that mindset of play. And actually, a lot of I've been reading some definitions of ritual, and it's sort of like what I see is like ritual is a way that adults play. Ritual can be a way that play with the sacred, because when we do these things, it's sort of like there is a blur between what's real and what's imaginary. Like, we're bowing to the Buddha, and well, we're bowing to the Buddha within us, but we're also just bowing to the statue. And so it's kind of this like in-between space, I guess. I don't know. I haven't totally formulated that yet into a better, more coherence way, but I think just wholeheartedly bringing your body and mind right now to that bow or to that bell ringing is really important. Zazen is another way. It's actually another ritual that we do. For a long time, I thought it was just meditation, but it's also another ritual that's related to play, because Taigen has a wonderful essay called Zazen as Enactment Ritual. I'll say it again. Zazen as Enactment Ritual, where, and I'm just going to quote one line from it, but it's a really great essay that talks about how, let me read this, this quote. The point is to enact the meaning of the teachings in actualized practice. And the whole praxis, including meditation, may thus be viewed as ritual ceremony expressions of the teaching, rather than as means to discover and attain something, some understanding of them. So when we're sitting, we're not just trying to figure out what does Buddhism mean, but like we are enacting the teachings. We are embodying the teachings. We are embodying Buddha, Buddha mind, in our bodies right at that moment. And again, it's like this play. Are we really? I don't know. It's sort of in that in-between space. I like to pretend I am, but is it just pretend? Is it just playing around? Or is it real? So that kind of space for me right now, anyway, what I'm exploring, is like that's really interesting, I think, to think about that, to play with that. And again, when we sit, especially here, sitting is a communal practice. Just like playing with kids, when we're doing chase and all those things, we sit together. Even though we're facing the wall, we're all here together sitting. We're all facing the wall together as a community. And I think that's really important. I sat for many years on my own because I didn't have a group to sit with. I was living in a place that didn't have a group. And having the chance to sit here even just once a week with other people is so important. It's just like really, and it's about getting to know other people, but just sitting with other people and hearing them breathe, hearing them sigh, hearing them move, that's just really encouraging for me. It can also be difficult because sometimes the breathing and the sighing might distract you. Or sometimes you might, you know, get annoyed with someone. But that's part of what this whole container is, this bigger space is that we can really work with that in this ritual space. Another thing that Hongzhi talks about is, and he talks about this a lot in this, is sense dusts. So he talks about sense dusts arising and responding or mutually responding to these sense dusts, which sense dust sounds kind of strange, but I think what it's really talking about is taste, touch, sight, sound, hearing, and thought. So this is the data that we get from the world around us. And this is kind of the only way we can experience the world. We don't experience it any other, I mean, I think. Yeah, I mean, these data like all come together and this arises, and then we pay attention to it, and then we maybe give it some kind of label. This is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And then we give it, like, we might give it a concept, and then we act on it. Or don't act, but there's this impulse to act. This is from, actually, Ben Connolly's book about Vasubandhu's Yogacara, 30 verses. It's in the library. It's really good. But that sort of, like, process, I've been playing with that a little bit, watching, just going down to the level of, can I just go down to just watching the sense dust arise? Can I watch that data from around me arise? And obviously, it's coming at us all the time. You know, so what Zazen gives us is a chance to maybe just pick out one thing, maybe just hearing. Actually, hearing is one that I've been working with a lot because I tend to use my breath more as a as a meditation anchor, but hearing is really interesting to pay attention to without trying to give it that pleasant, or I won't say that. It's really interesting just to watch hearing arise and then watch labels come up of, or the feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, or neutral is kind of hard to watch actually. And then watching, giving it a concept like, I don't like this, or this is the motorcycle that just went by, or, you know, and I'm not saying that we should, that I think we can slow it down, but I think there's nothing wrong with all of this. I think it's what we do with it. Like, how do we act? How do we act after we've gone that impulse? And I think what part of what Zazen gives us is a chance to watch that and then to see this is a impulse to act this way, but actually I can also act this way, or I can go this way, or I can go this way after I have that. And so it gives us just a broader range of being able to react or respond to what's going on around us in a skillful way. And there might be many skillful ways to do it, but it just gives us a wide, like I was saying before with kids, like more selves to try out, more things to try out when we have these experiences. So I think one example of this that just happened recently where I tried to engage with this wholeheartedly was at the camping session that we just had 2 weeks ago, right? 2 weeks ago. We went to the Illinois Dune State Park and had a session there. And one of the things we did was in the morning we woke up and we walked out to the beach to watch the sunrise. And so I was really looking forward to this. It was going to be this beautiful thing. And it was. But one thing I didn't think about was the mosquitoes decided to follow us. And I was sitting there, you know, and the sun was coming up and it was so beautiful. And all of a sudden the mosquitoes are like, and I was like, these stupid mosquitoes are ruining everything for me right now. This is a beautiful sunrise. Why aren't, you know, like the stupid mosquitoes. So I decided to, like, you know, try out this thing that I've been, you know, playing with. And just sitting there with watching the mosquitoes, and what was interesting is it was almost like a really sudden thing, just like thinking about it from the mosquitoes' perspective. We talked about this a little bit, Laurel. Like, you know, these are mothers that are trying to feed their children, you know, and they're like this big and completely fragile. I can smash them without even thinking about it, and probably did smash them without thinking about it. They're so brave and persistent to, you know, and I was like, oh, wow, you know. I still don't want to get bit by them, but I'm still pretty impressed by these little mosquitoes. So, you know, so this, it was still a beautiful sunset, and it was still annoying mosquitoes, but it was also just like a different experience of it. Just that little sort of like opening up that little bit of play there to let it open up and watch that arise instead of being like, stupid mosquitoes, you know, I still, you know, I gently went like this. And actually all I needed to really do is kind of go like this and then they would go away. I don't think I killed any, but. And then there was also the last period of Zazen that we had by a campfire, because we were trying to avoid the mosquitoes was really interesting because there was a family, two families that were camping right next to us. And they're really nice people. I was really impressed that they would always say hi to us, but they must have thought we were so strange too. Because like walking around slowly in a circle, sitting with our backs to each other, off on a hill, you know, they must have been like, who are these weirdos? But they were really actually, you know, they didn't, but they were eating dinner and we were sitting, you know, we're like, we're going to have the last period by the fire. So we're watching the fire. And then they started listening to music and it, you know, it's hard to not have a reaction to music, especially because it was like the greatest hits of the 80s and 90s. So it was like, and like, so Boston was played, Bon Jovi, you know, like these kind of songs. And it was really interesting to try to just sit there and listen and let that arise. It was really hard because I know the words to all those songs. I know all the guitar riffs, you know, and but it was also just interesting just to watch, see if I could get to that level of sense data where I was not really, where I was just watching that. But also it was also interesting just to watch my attention go to the music, because actually it didn't always stay on the music. You know, sometimes it went somewhere else to the fire or whatever, but just watching that or watching, thinking, this is a really stupid song, or I actually really like this song, you know, this Boston song, I forgot how much I like this, you know, like, or just like, just watching that whole process and not trying, I think when I was originally playing with this, I was going to try to just watch the sense dust arise. But I think it was interesting to watch this idea of play actually opened up a little bit, and I could see like the whole process just keep, it was sort of like endless, you know, keep going and going. But the interesting thing was the acting part, the impulse to act. A couple of times I was like, maybe I should go over there and ask them to turn down the music, because we're over here meditating. We are really, you know. But then I didn't, you know. And then I think they had a wonderful time over there, you know. I hope they did, you know. And so this idea of play, again, like, helped create a little bit bigger space where I didn't have to take everything so seriously, where it was a little bit lighter. It was just, again, like, I was able to wholeheartedly just sit there and just have all this happening around me, which usually I want it to be quiet and not have John Bon Jovi, you know, Living on a Prayer, you know. I didn't, you know. So one thing that this sort of play has helped me then in my everyday life is just like dealing with situations when I'm not sitting in med. These were two I was sitting zazen, but the other is like, just in everyday life, like my daughters love to put dishes in the sink, but never put them in the dishwasher, you know, or leave, you know. And so I decided to play with this a little bit, and instead of like, you know, be like kind of sarcastic, the dishes are in the sink, you know, or just doing it, you know, like, I'm just going to do it. And like, I decided instead to like go down to that, like, to stop and just watch it down to that, see if I could get down to take care of whatever, what's the suffering that's going on there? What's the pain that's happening? Why do I care so much? Why am I getting upset about a dish in the dishwasher? And just sort of just like taking care of that, tending to that, and not letting it become a reaction and figuring out a way to respond to that. And so just watching that, I'll just put the dish in the dishwasher, no big deal. Or sometimes it's her turn to do it. She should do it. You know, like, this is her, part of her job, and like part of her job in the family is to do that, so why not? You know, so but I could respond to that and talk to her about it in a non sarcastic or judgmental or irritated way. So I think this play, this creating this space, it was the same feelings, the same process, and in many cases the same result. I mean, the dish went in the dishwasher, but the space got a little bit bigger, and I could go this way, or I could go this way, or I could go this way. I had a little bit more options. That array of the self just sort of spread out a little bit more. So, to come back to the beginning, what about these really difficult times, though? What do we do when things like Charlottesville happens? How do we play with that? Because that's not fun. It's not. Doesn't seem like it could be something that is playful, and that's not what I'm suggesting at all. But I think, though, one thing we can do is, first of all, when things like that happen, maybe just sit down and see the greed, hate, and delusion. Try to get down to that level of suffering in ourselves first. See it arise and tend to that, and then from there figure out or see what happens, what kind of response can we have. It could be going to a vigil, it could be, you know, really paying attention to how we are privileged and how I heard something like there's a hashtag now, something like not us or something like that. And really, the critique of that is like, not, it's not, this is us. All of this stuff, it's our ancient twisted karma. This is all of it arising is us. It's not who we want to be, but it's part of who we are right now. And this is something we have to tend to and we have to take care of. And I'm not suggesting again that we have to be like, really like, oh, hello, white supremacist. I'm going to be so nice to you. But like finding a way to respond to that in a way that is not going to continue the greed, hate, and delusion. And I don't have an answer for that. I don't have any kind of how to do that. I'm not saying that. But all I'm saying is maybe finding a way to play with that, not in a playful way necessarily, but a way to like just open up the space to look at it and see it clearly. As clearly as we can. And that's what I have. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Responses, comments, questions? Yeah.
When you were talking about being Perseus, yeah. It reminded me of the line in the Precious Mirror Samadhi where it says, you are not it, but intrinsic is you.
That's not my rakusu, actually. It's like, yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I love the idea of being more playful and zazen. And I, as you were talking, I realized, like, yeah, I get very playful in zazen, especially like when we're sitting for several days. I mean, I feel like I had to get playful just to, you know, get through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with pain in the body or, mm-hmm. you know, just like just radically just shifting my attitude about it. Like, yeah, I'm not going to die. That's immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah. Oh my God, this pain, it's going to get worse, worse, worse. I'm going to probably break my leg or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's never true, right? So just, you know, like actually playing mm-hmm. with the sensations and what mm-hmm. it really feels like and that. Heat of it, and
mm-hmm.
the tension of it, or the pressure of it, and you know, mm-hmm. it's very helpful. And then things start to move, and then the energy starts to move, and I can play with that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I thought about when we did prostrations, I get quite playful in my mind because I'm always surrendering something, but I don't really want to experience anymore, like fear or anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes on the positive thing, maybe I'm sort of, you know, like that, you know, surrendering to the Buddha. Or,
mm-hmm.
But I generally come up with some intention to get down on the yoga, you know, mm-hmm. not surrender.
Yeah. I think when you were talking about the, in a, like a retreat or like a all day sitting, what the word that came up was like, when you play, you can become intimate with it a little bit in a different way, I think. Intimate with that, or it's also the roaming part. He says roam and play. It's like that exploration of like what's going on right now.
Yeah. And the vedana, you know, the like it, don't like it, intro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all we really ever experience according to the Buddha, right? That's mm-hmm. all there is. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, you know. So that's been really helpful to kind of
Thank you.
So the man who made these beautiful paintings mm-hmm. came here and did a workshop a few years ago, and I don't know, it just came into my mind when you were talking about playing and forms, the way he uses brushes and his ink is so playful and beautiful. It's quite wonderful. It's like magic.
Mm-hmm.
It feels exactly like magic because it's very simple, very pure, and there it is. Mm-hmm. One stroke. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. The other form in Zen that feels like play, that doesn't start out feeling like play, is sewing.
Mm-hmm.
You may, for new people, you might not know that people that it's hard to get used to that at first, but then it becomes very focusing. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't use the word play, mm-hmm. except the way you're using it. And you said your word flexibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.